First of all, welcome to the Public Safety Committee meeting number one, April 3, 2025. Today, our interpreters are Andrew Diella and Jeannie Ismaili. So if you are to press the button in front of you and provide comments, please be sure to be mindful of the speed of your speech so that they can keep up with this meeting. First is the adoption of agenda. Need a mover and a seconder. Deputy Mayor Kim Smith moves, seconded by Sherry Robertson. All those in favor of the agenda? Thank you. All in favor? First on the agenda is minutes, Public Safety Committee meeting minutes number two, dated October 3, 2024. I need a mover and a seconder. Moved by Deputy Mayor Kim Smith. Need a seconder. Seconded by Sherry Robertson. Thank you. All those in favor? Thank you. Unanimous. Any declaration of interest? I see none. Delegations, none. Deferred business table items, none. And straight to new business. Now, these items I brought forward are verbal, and I'll be speaking on each item individually just to help this hopefully move to some discussions. And just get right into it. So the first 5A is the beer and wine store safety measures sales control strategy. Eteluit's beer and wine store has been a focal point for community concerns regarding public safety and alcohol-related issues. Since its opening in 2017, residents have reported increased incidents of public intoxication, thefts, and assaults in the vicinity. Now, a few key discussion points are security personnel deployment. In August 2023, a security guard was stationed in the store's parking lot to deter criminal activities. This initiative followed a surge in assaults and robberies during the summer months. The presence of security personnel has reportedly had a positive impact, leading to a reduction in such incidents. However, more measures need to be put in place to deter criminal activities, and more security presence is needed during its opening hours throughout the year. Increased police patrols. The Eteluit RCMP have intensified patrols around the beer and wine store, especially during warmer months, when public intoxication tends to rise. A zero-tolerance approach includes seizing open alcohol and addressing public intoxication proactively. These measures need to be further implemented and be consistent throughout the year to make any impact on safety around the beer and wine store and other areas in our community. Public awareness campaigns. The City of Eteluit has launched initiatives emphasizing zero tolerance for public drinking, particularly.
You're talking very fast.
Sorry. Public awareness campaigns. The City of Eteluit has launched initiatives emphasizing zero tolerance for public drinking, particularly in your city-owned facilities. These campaigns aim to promote healthy, alcohol-free activities and encourage community members to look out for one another. However, these measures also need to be consistent throughout the year, and more public education and signage needs to increase in order to capture a larger audience rather than just the City of Eteluit facilities. Consideration of purchase limits. As far as I know, I have not seen the limit go down over the year since the opening of the beer and wine store. I would suggest cutting the purchase limit in half and potentially align with measures taken in other communities, at least until we can come up with a long-term solution. Despite these efforts, challenges persist. In May 2024, Councillor Kyle Shepherd proposed implementing a temporary alcohol ban if enforcement measures fail to reduce public drinking in outdoor spaces. This suggestion underscores the need for more effective control measures. To further enhance community safety, a comprehensive action plan should be developed. Enhance enforcement, empowering municipal enforcement officers to collaborate closely with the RCMP to ensure consistent enforcement of existing laws. Community support programs. Investing in addiction and trauma recovery services. Address underlying issues contributing to public intoxication and related crimes. Public education initiatives. Implementing educational programs to raise awareness about the harmful effects of alcohol. Promoting responsible consumption and fostering community engagement in addressing these challenges. By adopting a multifaceted approach that combines enforcement, support, and education, I am confident that we can work together in building a safe environment for Tulumut. Now I pass it on to the floor for any comments or maybe suggestions or open up to what you guys think, because this is a serious matter that a lot of Tulumut witness day in and day out.
I do agree that, and I don't think anyone here would disagree, that alcohol is an issue in our community. But I do have concerns related to restricting access and lowering the daily limits. As we know, through the rest of Nunavut, like, dry communities are not actually, there's no such thing as a dry community. And I know with the opening of the beer and wine store, we look at that and tie it to some of the things that we see around town, public intoxication, you know, there's more drug use, there's a lot of things, but I do think it's important to note that this isn't just an Iqaluit beer and wine store opening issue. There has been a national, you go anywhere in Canada, there's been like a national mental health crisis that's resulted in significant amounts of alcohol abuse, drug abuse. Any major city, you see it more than you, like, just even going to Ottawa, you see it more than I think you ever did before. I think we need to look at, I don't think it's necessarily productive to focus solely on access to alcohol through the beer and wine store. I do know that Rankin reduced their limits by half. But from my understanding, that actually hasn't reduced the amount of alcohol in Rankin Inlet. There's more trips to the beer and wine store there. People now sell their limit to other people. There's a flat rate for selling your daily purchase limit, and alcohol permit requests have gone up by a significant amount. So I don't know if that's necessarily the answer. I think it's important to recognize that we will be seeing the opening of Kasaniyat soon, the treatment facility, which will make a huge difference in our territory. But I do agree that a public awareness campaign would be helpful, and I would love to see even, I believe in the NWT, every bottle of alcohol sold comes with a carcinogen warning on it, almost the same way that cigarettes do, because alcohol is a known carcinogen. So, you know, a public health campaign, I think, could be effective as well. On one thing I do want to note that as you mentioned, Councillor Shepherd suggesting the alcohol ban. From my understanding, the only power that the municipality has would be to enact, I think we can do 3 times a year, a 2-week ban on alcohol. But to be clear, that is not just a ban on the beer and wine store selling alcohol, that is every restaurant in town would not be allowed to sell alcohol, and any alcohol that you have in your home would immediately become illegal for that 2-week period as well. So it's not as simple as just banning alcohol for a 2-week period. There's a bit more to it. I'm not sure what the answer is, but I do think that public awareness and just improving the mental health of our community through, you know, recreation programming, access to spaces, I think these are the things that help treat the underlying issues instead of just the symptoms of it. Anyway, that's my comments for now.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Does anyone else have any comments or anything to do with this specific item? Sergeant Rob Daly?
Yeah, I think if we're looking at, if you're considering an approach to alcohol reduction sales, perhaps some sort of hybrid approach that would, have response, people that are responsible with their purchase of alcohol and whatnot, that they can manage it in some format. I don't know how you would look at that. A daily reduction might be important, but then if I'm going to the liquor or the beer and wine store once a month, like, why can't I have a reasonable access if I'm going to host a party or something like that? I think if there has to be some sort of hybrid approach rather than I've got to go now twice as often to the beer and wine store or average citizen in order to host a party or a function or something of that nature. I will comment that while I totally agree that there's probably more alcohol and specifically like orders into the Rankin store or the Rankin outlet, and whatnot. We are seeing in our beer and wine store communities, Rankin and Anacleet, last year there was a significant reduction in occurrences for both communities. Rankin did have a reduction last year, I'm not sure of the dates. But there was a significant amount of reporting and prisoners held in those two statistical categories. At Rankin and Anacleet. So I think we need some more data on that and some more years to really assess that. I do think that obviously having higher limits, if you say for purchase, would be beneficial in an approach where I could go once a month and pick up a couple 2-4s, and the impact on being able to enforce that would be higher. But also, I don't think reducing, you're still going to have your people eat drinking in public. It is what it is. Anyway, I just want to make those comments. I do see a reduction from the policing standpoint in those two communities. But again, more time and more statistical, more data would be important.
Thank you, Itzibata. I think it would be helpful if perhaps administration could reach out to Nunavut Liquor and Cannabis to actually see what the effect has been on sales and the differences with reduction to the Rankin store. I think that would be, we can probably get some data on how that's actually affected total consumption and whatnot, maybe. The RCMP can provide some of the crime stats around that as well to administration to kind of get a better view on the issue.
Absolutely. And very quickly before I move on to Jessica, so these points that I brought up are just simply for just to help get a conversation going for sure, and like the limits, purchase limits, obviously it's just suggestions, and obviously we've only experienced limits going up, and we don't know what the impact could be if we brought it back down. So these are just open suggestions, and that's why I wanted to bring this forward, because I'd love to hear from you guys what could possibly work, and getting some numbers, like Sergeant Robert Daly mentioned, like it would probably help with potentially coming up with maybe a temporary solution while we gauge on a long-term solution. Jessica?
Thank you. In listening to the conversation, I've lived here forever, and I've obviously seen an increase in different types of crime around the city. One thing I think might be helpful is if we frame the question slightly differently. I see a lot of conversations about the beer and wine store. And the beer and wine store opened here and in Rankin Inlet, we didn't see a huge increase in any kind of crime. There was no correlation between the two. That was abnormal over years prior to the beer and wine store opening. So I'm not sure the beer and wine store can be identified as the issue. So I think if we're looking at increase of alcohol consumption publicly or intoxication or a rise in crime of intoxication, I'm not sure pinpoint the beer and wine store as the issue. So I think it might be helpful for this committee as we move forward to broaden that question a little bit, or a problem statement there, to alcohol issues in the community as opposed to the beer and wine store. I think if we focus on that as the issue, we might not be getting the answers that we're looking for, because we can go to the Department of Finance and ask them questions about liquor, but they will probably give you the same stats. There's been no increase as a result of the beer and wine store. Or maybe they won't, but in my experience and the information I've seen, there's no real correlation between beer and wine store and increasing crime and public intoxication, which is my suggestion.
Thank you, Jessica. Sherry?
Okay. I thought it was reported, actually, that Rankin saw less calls lowered their, I'm pretty sure I read that in the paper. Might have read it on a Rankin Inlet person's Facebook. and I personally, like just as a community member, I felt like after the City Hall meeting last year when Kyle Shipper talked about the special location 2-week shutdown, I felt like there was like an immediate drop in the amount of violence and stuff that was happening around town. I support lowering the allowable just on principle, because promises were made after community members, especially elders, gave their input, and those promises were never kept, and it bothers me. Another thing that bothers me, whether there's a direct correlation or not, is we send messages to children who are the next generation of people who can drink. And we know that those kids, because they, on their school projects and posters, ask for the beer and wine store to be closed. And we say that youth are important, and they're telling us what they want us to do, and we're not listening. So that part bothers me. So, but the other thing, when I first came here in the 90s, we had an interdict list, and I understand everybody has some issues with the interdict list, but I feel like how you got on the interdict list was by committing a violent crime while under the influence of alcohol or several violent crimes. And if we're, you know, yeah, there's people who don't have an issue. So I think looking at some sort of way to, for the people that are doing bad things while they're under the influence, hurting other people, there should be a consequence. And the easy consequence is to say they can't. And I understand they can go to a bootlegger, but that is also a criminal offense that can be, something can be done about it. If you're buying alcohol legally, consuming alcohol legally, there's nothing the RCMP can do until you hurt somebody, which maybe is not very proactive.
Thank you, Sherry. And I wanted to bring this up. Like, it's not unknown that the vicinity of the beer and wine store, we see a lot of loitering, we see a lot of intoxication, we see the beer cans on the ground, we see them in the ditch, we see them in the snow piles, and especially more so during the summer months when everything's melted. And, you know, it's businesses like the Baffin Gas Bar or the Discovery Inn Hotel, and, you know, there's a chart room there, and there's also a skidoo path for some people going down to the ice, or, you know, people driving down to the West 40. You know, it's the vicinity of the beer and wine store and the impact that it's had on the whole community. We see it everywhere, and that's why I brought some of these specific items, and I want to kind of help provide, you know, branching out the discussion, because there is a much need for more discussions on this, and it could probably influence, you know, the community to take action too in other ways, and influence, you know, businesses to, you know, take new initiatives on how to protect their businesses and their properties and stuff. And but I appreciate everyone's input, and I really hope that, you know, having these discussions prompts our community to take a closer look at what the Beer and Wine Store has done to the community. Is there anybody else that can?
This is perhaps a question for Rod that I don't know if he'll be able to answer, but I will ask it anyway. As opposed to necessarily changing limits, do we have a mechanism within the city to add, you know, per beer sold, per bottle of wine sold, I don't want to say a tax, but I guess a tax is maybe the term, that could go directly into community programming. You know, for every beer sold, you know, we add a 20 cents to that, which with all the beer that's sold in town, I'm sure it's would be a significant amount that could be directly reinvested in either public education campaigns or public health campaigns, mental health programming. I don't know if that's something that we have the ability to do.
Unfortunately, no. Cities, Towns, and Villages Act is pretty clear on what the municipalities, jurisdiction is when it comes to taxation. So I see it something as a territorial level, those conversations. And in essence, that if that tax were to be there, yes, that money could be put into educational programming, it could be put into counseling, those sort of things. But unfortunately, no. The municipality would not have any control of that taxation.
What if we just call it a consumption fee? Call it something different. Okay, thanks, Ron.
Thank you. Yeah, just to close out my comments about the beer and wine store safety measures and the sale control strategy, some ideas will obviously, after this meeting, kind of come to fruition, and I hope that moving forward that there could be added communication between ourselves to maybe implement something, especially before the summer months. And it's very much around the corner, and, you know, the sun's out a lot longer, and spring's here, and people are going to be out a lot longer. And I know that we can influence conversations to start to, you know, implement some safety measures around beer and wine store safety around the community members. Great. Safe to move on. Thank you. Now 5B, loitering around grocery stores. Loitering around grocery stores has created public safety concerns, especially when people engage in disruptive behavior, public intoxication, or even theft. This issue is not just a nuisance, but can make shoppers and store employees feel unsafe. In communities like Iqaluit, where the beer and wine store has faced such challenges, loitering around other retail spaces such as grocery stores can also lead to an increase in crime or a general sense of insecurity. Some of the safety concerns linked to loitering are increased risk of theft or shoplifting, people who loiter or outside grocery stores may be involved in or enabling theft. Shoplifting becomes a higher risk when store personnel are distracted by other issues. Public intoxication and disorderly behavior. In some areas, loiterers may be under the influence of alcohol or drugs, which can lead to aggressive or disruptive behavior. Verbal altercations or physical confrontations. Groups of people hanging around might engage in arguments, increasing the risk of violent encounter. This can scare off customers, and employees may feel uncomfortable or unsafe in their workplace. Many of the employees at grocery stores are also youth and elders. Loitering causes potential threat to their safety. Deterring customers. People who are simply trying to shop may feel uncomfortable or unsafe around large groups of people loitering near the entrances or in the parking lots. In some cases, the presence of loiterers can reduce the frequency of shoppers, impacting the business and the community's economy. Negative impact on the community's image. When loitering becomes a norm around grocery stores, it can negatively affect how the community is perceived by outsiders or potential visitors. In areas reliant on tourism or community-based interactions, a perception of high crime or disorder can deter people from visiting or supporting local businesses. Some suggestions, some possible solutions to tackle these issues. Increase security presence. A visible security guard or surveillance cameras can deter loitering, especially around entrances and parking areas. Collaboration with local law enforcement. Regular patrols by local police can help enforce loitering laws, addressing public intoxication issues. Community engagement and support programs. Offering local services to those loitering, such as access to addiction treatment or social work support, could address any underlying causes of loitering behavior. Clear signage and enforcement of loitering laws. Designing safer spaces. Stores could also consider creating spaces that discourage loitering. Addressing loitering concerns effectively often involves a combination of enforcement, social services, and community-based solutions to create a safer, more welcoming environment for everyone. I hope this committee can come up with some solutions on how to address this concern. And now I bring it to the floor for any comments or suggestions to this concern. Mayor Smith.
I think, you know, as much as we don't, you know, want to necessarily have people loitering outside the grocery stores, I don't think a lot of these people have anywhere else to go a lot of the time. They can pop in and get warm for a bit. I know there was a warming center open in the winter. I'm sure that's probably set to close soon now that summer's on its way, but I think, you know, there's, I don't know how many, unfortunately, it's cold out there, right? And I'm not sure how many other places people have to go, and I think, I don't know if it's necessarily, although there is, you know, public safety concerns, I think a lot of this is up to the business to decide how to police the loitering outside of their own locations. I'm sure some of us remember when Ventures used to play, I think it was like classical music all day on the speakers outside to discourage people from hanging out. I'm sure we could, you know, play Baby Shark out there all day and drive people nuts. But I think, you know, one thing, people loitering is one thing, but if you see someone in front of a grocery store who is, you know, acting in a dangerous manner, you know, selling drugs, you know, visibly intoxicated and causing problems, and that's when we, as residents of this community, we should call the RCMP, or the business should call the RCMP, to hopefully have it dealt with, lest we end up with a stanky leg situation. Again, yeah, I think a lot of this comes down to, yeah, people are trying to stay warm and, you know, get a bit of change while they're at it, right? So it's kind of a difficult one to address here, but I think I would encourage anyone who is ceased participating in illegal activity outside one of our local grocery stores to you know, to take the step and call the RCMP.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor Smith, and those are all valid comments because, again, these are just to help with discussion. And when it comes to loitering, like, yes, 100%, a lot of these people have no place to go during the day, and a lot of these people just want to simply stay warm. Example, before I came to this meeting today, there's a gentleman sleeping in our office foyer, and I completely understand the fact that it is frigid cold up there. Winter months are hard, and especially when it comes to lack of housing and lack of resources, lack of, you know, space and shelters and the wet, damp shelter. And, you know, this topic I wanted to bring up mainly because, like, there is that, you know, there's two sides of it. One is they're either loitering for negative, you know, reasons or they just don't have a place to go. And I want to separate those two and focus on the fact that there's different conversations for either, both of those. But when it comes to, like, public intoxication, disorderly behavior in grocery stores, like, I've seen, you know, even Facebook posts, you know, videos of people drunk and causing and disrupting customers accessing just the local grocery store. And there's a full-on fist fight right there in the front, and it's keeping them from entering the building. It's those kinds of situations that I wanted to bring up. And it's unsafe because we have elders, children, families, individuals in our community that are trying to access the grocery stores or other businesses throughout town, whether it's government offices or the bank or anywhere else. So, you know, and these verbal altercations and physical confrontations that we witness from time to time, and it happens more often than we think, is the mere fact why I brought this up. They are visible issues, and they're just conversations that we need to continue having to see if, you know, it could again influence conversations with other organizations and businesses. It's putting it out there and making sure that we understand that we are aware of the situation. Sherry.
Yes. I think some of this stuff, like, kind of falls under injustice, all that kind of stuff. But I do wonder what was happening last summer, because there was a period last summer where the front of North Mart was okay, and it seemed like the drug dealers had moved off to the side and the rocks behind, you know, rather, like, just to be on it, like, upfront about it. Like, if there was something that was going on that was working last year, and then slowly it's, and then, yeah, I understand there's a lot of people that don't have anywhere to go, but I'm thinking of four people that I see there pretty regularly. They all got housing. Like, I think maybe they're looking, older people are looking for some social stuff to go. I don't know. Like, you know, could be that too. But overall, like, if their unpopular opinion, if we had sort of a safe consumption place, maybe we could take our kids to the grocery store without worrying about it.
This leads to me, like, it, not me, but it leads to the idea that, like, there are a lack of activities even for adults, young adults, youth. So prompting them to go and hang out in front of stores and businesses, it's a visible sign that there's lack of not just resources, but activities to do. And loose dogs, animal control, and concerns for public safety. As many residents have experienced firsthand, the issue of stray and uncontrolled dogs is not just a minor inconvenience. it has become a significant public safety risk. We have all heard reports of pedestrians, children, and elders being chased, attacked, or feeling unsafe simply walking through our neighborhoods. In addition, other pets have been injured in unprovoked attacks. This situation presents several challenges. Public safety risks. Loose and aggressive dogs create dangerous situations, particularly for vulnerable members of our community. We must act before we witness more serious incidents. Lack of effective enforcement. Despite existing bylaws, enforcement is limited due to a lack of resources. Animal welfare. Many of these dogs are not only a public risk, but are also suffering themselves. Unchecked breeding, lack of proper care, and exposure to extreme weather conditions are harming the animals as well. We need to take immediate action to address these concerns and implement sustainable solutions, like stronger enforcement of animal control bylaws, community education programs, improved animal control resources, a public reporting system, spay and neuter initiatives. Addressing this issue is not just about safety, it's about improving the overall well-being of our community and the animals within it. We need a proactive approach, and we need it now. I urge this committee to prioritize this matter and maybe potentially help think about next steps on what we can do. I open it to the floor for any comments or suggestions or thoughts. Deputy Mayor Smith.
Thank you, Itzikontak. Perhaps our municipal enforcement officers can update us on any on what, if, do we have an animal control officer at this time, or any kind of animal control efforts that we have ongoing, perhaps?
Thank you for the question, Deputy Mayor Smith. There is no animal control officer now. That position is rolled into just a regular enforcement officer. So all enforcement officers have the duty of animal control. We're short-staffed right now. We currently have 3 regular officers, and we're looking to fill 4 more positions. Just on the points that were brought up there for education initiatives, we did have last year an officer going around door-to-door handing out pamphlets and registering dogs on site if they were willing to take a tag and register them. For the public reporting, the city does have a reporting portion on the city's website. You can put in a complaint or compliment, and it goes to the appropriate department. And I believe the Nunavut Animal Rescue down in Apex is doing spay and neuter clinics a couple times a year.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor Smith.
And thank you, Chief Allen. I'm curious for the dogs that the city does take into custody. It sounds like a weird way to say it for a dog. How many would you say are like repeat over and over? Are they the same general ones? Like their owners are getting them back and still just not putting them on leads, or is it kind of new ones each time? If you can answer that. I don't know, we don't have IDs for the dogs necessarily, but thank you.
I'd say it's probably about 40% are repeat dogs coming in. And the reason we are seeing that is because you need to have a tag once the dog's in the impound. They can't release it until they register the dog.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor Smith.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it might be a good time to suggest that council reviews the animal control bylaw, maybe, you know, reducing the time that we keep an animal in our custody, and, you know, if look at other mechanisms for
for, I guess, I don't know, shipping them out. But also, you know, sorry, but if your dogs come to us four times and you can't keep your dog, controlled, and it keeps coming back into city hands, then, you know, maybe we put a limit on how many times we let that happen before it's, or you don't get to keep your dog anymore. But maybe it's a good idea to suggest that council evaluates that bylaw.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor Smith. One of the things that prompted me to bring this item up was, of course, public safety, especially the violent dogs. Those are that are keen to say hello to you, not just at grocery stores, but around town. We see them hanging out in groups of maybe 3 to 7 chasing each other around. But there's also those groups of dogs that could cause, that have aggression. Now, I don't want to fully rely on this Facebook post, but it was someone witnessing our own staff, our own response, a couple of guys responding to a concern at a house, and while they were attending to this person, a group of dogs were attacking them. So this prompted me to bring up these concerns because these stray-up dogs, violent dogs, curious dogs, also cause our own City of Ethelwee staff to keep them from doing their own jobs. And it creates risks over time and risks of being able to fully respond to calls. Is there anybody else that wanted to maybe comment or mention anything? Or are we good to move on to the next item? Now, this item, I know I'm kind of hoping that I might pick Justice's brain. So the Youth Restorative Justice Program, so it's not, this isn't a proposal for a program, but because we have a current restorative diversion program within the Department of Justice, there could be maybe hopefully potential conversations to come out of this conversation we have today. Now, the Restorative Justice Diversion Program allows, the current program with justice, allows a person who committed a crime and those affected by the crime to work together through community justice committees in an effort to repair harm caused by their criminal behavior and restore harmony in the community. Community justice outreach workers, also known as CJOs, and community justice committees facilitate the restorative justice diversion program in the communities. CJOs receive potential matters from the RCMP and Public Prosecution Services Canada. Eligible matters may then be diverted from the usual criminal court processes while the restorative justice efforts are taken. The role of the community justice committee is to reconcile the person who committed the crime with those who are affected by crime and the community stakeholders utilizing restorative approach and Inuit societal values to repair the harm and restore the harmony in the community. Each community in Nunavut has a community justice committee, which are representative of all ages, with special regard for youth and elders. A healing-centered approach to addressing crime-related harm within communities aligns with Inuit societal values and traditional Inuit concepts of justice. Restorative justice offers Nunavummiut the opportunity to repair relationships affected by criminal activity as an alternative within the criminal justice system. I strongly feel we need to do a full audit of this program. A more trauma-informed youth restorative justice program in Iqaluit is essential to effectively address the unique challenges faced by Inuit youth and others in the community. Here are some key reasons why I'm bringing this up today and what such a program should include. Historical and ongoing trauma. Many Inuit youth have been impacted by intergenerational trauma stemming from colonialism, residential schools, and forced relocations. high rates of substance use, mental health struggles, and suicide among Inuit communities indicate a need for healing-focused justice responses. Culturally relevant healing. Western justice systems often fail to incorporate Inuit Kalimantukangi IQ traditional knowledge. A trauma-informed program should recognize and integrate Inuit cultural values such as respect, healing, and community accountability. Breaking the cycle of harm, youth involved in crime are often victims of trauma themselves. A system that focuses on healing rather than punishment can help prevent reoffending and foster resilience. And what a trauma-informed restorative justice program should include is land-based and cultural healing practices, involve elders, hunters, and knowledge keepers in justice processes, use traditional practices like storytelling, sewing, hunting, and being on the land to support healing. Mental health and substance use support. Ensure access to culturally competent therapists and counselors. Incorporate trauma-informed training for all facilitators. Victim-centered and community-led processes. Offer meaningful restitution for those harmed. Allow for community and family involvement in youth rehabilitation. Education and skill development. Help youth gain skills in conflict resolution, leadership, and emotional regulation. Offer pathways to employment and education rather than incarceration. Support networks for youth and families. Create wraparound services that include housing, mentorship, and social support. And address root causes like poverty, food insecurity, and lack of recreational opportunities. And such a program could, like the overview of this such program, especially in Iqaluit, it could aim to establish an alternative justice model that is culturally relevant, community-based, and designed to meet the unique needs of Inuit youth. Rooted in the principles of restorative justice, the program will provide a framework for addressing youth offenses with the goal of healing, reconciliation, and reintegration into society. By working collaboratively, victims, families, and community members, this initiative will help build stronger, healthier relationships while reducing recidivism and promoting a sense of collective responsibility. The program will adapt traditional restorative justice practices to be culturally appropriate and meaningful for Inuit youth, leveraging the wisdom of elders, Inuit values, and community participation. If this program could move forward, a jurisdictional scan can be initiated to identify the best practices and frameworks from other regions that can be applied to Iqaluit to ensure the success of such a program if it were created. And now I bring this up because it is us as leaders in this community to set the tone for the next generation of leaders. And I'm grateful that I had mentors in my life and leaders in my life and my family, voices in my community, growing up in Rankin, Akbet, and here in Iqaluit, that provided me such a lens to seek more ways of dealing with the trauma, especially as an intergenerational trauma survivor myself. And when we speak up about these issues, these, you know, potential ways of helping our next generation, it's going to bring more of an audience to work collaboratively for the youth. It opens the doors for discussions. It opens the doors for, you know justice, RCMP, schools, family services, DEAs, everyone to take part in such discussions to build the foundation and communicate more with our youth. Especially as a parent, and I know there are other parents in this room and maybe other people that, you know, seek to find solutions for their troubled children, troubled young adults who can't seem to find a way back into society. I open the floor to maybe some comments and concerns or discussion. Sherry Robinson.
That was a lot. Sorry. I forget there's names I have to call you guys. I'm wondering, I don't know if anybody over there is from the media. If they are, I'm going to say this. I would love for Hillary to get a bear land control, something along those lines. I would love for us to pick a group that we would, and for us, I mean, we talk about it, I think at our kitchen tables, but we need somebody to lead the charge, I think, and because it could address some of the kids who are wandering around, it can address what's going on outside of businesses, public drinking, something like that could help with a lot of things. Maybe even the dogs, because I know there's a lot of older people afraid to go outside because of the dogs too, right? Like they're shut in a bit. And maybe that's where it starts. Are you willing to walk somebody to the store who's afraid of the dogs? Maybe that's, it's just a couple people who are willing to volunteer to do something like that. And again, since we're talking about the trauma that kids are experiencing, it takes a community to raise a child. And you can be the best parent in the world, but if kids are over and over watching somebody be hurt and nothing happening to them, that sends a message. No matter what you're trying as a parent to teach your kid, that sends a message. And that's why I'm going to keep fighting for something along the lines of the interdict list at minimum, so that even if the person who is hurting someone doesn't change, kids see that it's not okay.
Thank you, Sherry. Anybody else? Jessica Young.
Thanks for that. So in terms of the diversion program, you did speak to it. We do have an active community justice diversion program. There was a protocol signed in 2015 between the government of the PRCMP and the Public Prosecution Service of Canada for this diversion program. Every community in Nunavut has a community justice committee, and they're responsible, and those are community members. So it is community-led, depending on the community. It can be more active than others. Iqaluit does have an active community justice committee. And essentially, this program is for individuals who could be charged. It's pre- and post-charge referrals from either the RCMP or PPSC. So it is quite active. One challenge with this program is that only certain types of crimes are eligible for referral to this committee, but it is specific to individuals who do commit crimes, who run into contact with law enforcement. So I'm not sure if the suggestion is to create a duplicate type committee, but I would suggest if we were looking at it to first determine what the existing committee does and whether or not there are any challenges with how it's currently run and operated, and maybe that's more about public education, educating people who want to be part of these committees, how they can impact youth and adults and pre- or post-charge specific, I guess, lower level crimes. If there's a suggestion of a youth diversion program that's outside of the court system, so maybe kids who are regularly getting into trouble but not necessarily being picked up for crimes, that could be a separate suggestion, but I think it would just be important to get as much information about the existing system and how we can support improving that if that's a suggestion about the diversion program.
Thank you, Jessica. And thank you guys for your point. Again, this is to inspire conversation within government, within the federal government, within organizations in Iqaluit, I wish we could do like a full rounded all for all Nunavut youth, but we gotta start somewhere, right? In the conversations here today, I hope we'll inspire more conversations to be had within your organizations, at your offices. Again, we are building the foundation for the next generation of leaders and youth, young adults, to take on the realm of what we're doing here today. It's what we leave behind, a legacy of hard work. It's for them. And I want to highlight that it also brings the opportunity to rebuild bridges between youth and elders, and young adults and elders. Each year, unfortunately, we lose elders and their knowledge. Oral history is hard nowadays. An example, last week I was sitting down with a very dear relative from Alberta, and I had wished I had turned on my recording on my phone so I can listen to him over and over, like when he goes back home. Not often do we see youth or young adults interacting with elders in town to create that safer space, that relationship between them. And, you know, creating, you know, if this program, you know, maybe if, like Jessica said, like there is an existing program. However, you know, maybe there could be, you know, there's potential to revisit this program to see what's working, what's not working. Have there been public education awareness initiatives about this program? Is the community aware of it? Is it being distributed to the community? Is there enough advertisement that the rest of our community who don't know where to turn, are they aware of it? And that's why I want to bring this specific item up, is creating more opportunity to have that out there, more public awareness, more public education about the services. Sergeant Robert Daly.
Hi, thank you. I think very similar to what Jessica brought up in terms of the Beer and Wine Store, maybe redefining what this point is, and maybe the problem isn't youth restorative justice in and of itself. I'm not suggesting that I have the answer, but I know the Gakuli Detachment, Staff Sergeant Daryl Galen and I are working on this hub model, where we're proactively approaching, they're in the training. I don't want to suggest that this is active right now, but they're in the training process. But it sounds to me like what we're discussing is maybe something in the capacity of like a youth-centered approach as a facet of this, where various agencies are working together with teachers, family services, the police, and whomever, and going out proactively approaching some of these kids that are in trouble or maybe in some sort of distress or crisis, and really making that approach and that focus. It kind of, in retrospect, brings me back to how we all came here with the working group for the Public Safety Committee. We were working on funding, we were working on, public safety initiatives, and I think now it sounds like we're back to square one here, and I'm wondering if we can't re-engage in that. I think that's all I have to say at this point.
Thank you. And Deputy Mayor Smith?
To my fellow committee members here for some of your comments. I know this is all just for discussion, but I do think it is important to remember that, you know, this is just, a lot of these issues are a lot larger scale than just our community, but this is the, Public Safety Committee for the City of Iqaluit, and I think when we're talking specifically about youth and ways to divert youth, the ways that a municipality can do that is through equitable access to recreation, more recreational programming, more programming in general for kids, free programming for kids, and also just making it easier through providing space, and just, I guess, working through the bureaucracy for some of the not-for-profits in town to do the wonderful work that they do. There are things we could do on the municipal level, for sure, and that is providing access and providing services for youth, because kids who are busy are generally staying out of trouble, so.
Thank you. And again, these were just points to help with opening more discussion, opening more doors for discussion, because, and like Sergeant Daly had just mentioned, like, we don't want to work back at square one, but it's ensuring that these conversations continue outside of this room, continue, you know, initiating these programs, or so. And I really appreciate everyone's points and providing some information. We need to set that tone, and I appreciate each and every one of you do. Every one of us here wear different hats in this community, and we make up a whole of in creating a safer space for our children, too, the youth and young adults. Move on to the last item, and this item I specifically want to bring up because I think it is much needed to have more than a couple conversations a year, and maybe continue with leading with, you know, setting a plan before summer. And so 5E is at additional public safety committee meeting for Thursday, June 12, 2025 at 3 p.m. And solely because I think it's very useful and handy and productive that each of us continue having these conversations more than a couple times a year.
Can I make these see that done? Well, I see what you're saying, with having continuing these conversations, and I think we all do in our daily lives. I don't know if an additional public safety committee meeting is what I would be more interested in. Is having the way we do public consultations on the water plan, or, you know, various things that we're doing in town, have an event that day where the public can come to the Elders Clinic, for example, and express their public safety concerns to city staff, and, you know, any counselors or whoever would like to be there. I think it would be great to hear directly from the public on, because, you know, there's things we think of, but there's probably a lot of stuff that we don't, too, that people would be interested in coming out to say. So I think that might be would be my suggestion.
Thank you. Sherry Robertson?
I like the idea of a community gathering, but I'm wondering if what we could actually do is, like, if this bothers you and you have time to contribute to some solution, or you have an idea about a solution, but, because I think, I don't know about anybody else here, but there's a lot to be done. And a small pool of people working on it, but I don't think that means there's a small pool of people willing to do it, but they just don't know what to do. Like, you know, Amber, you know, how you took the lead, you know, you built it and they came, right? And it was inspiring. And hopefully other people in the community would feel inspired to do something about some of the issues that we know are pretty concerning to pretty much everybody in town. So, like, I think having a meeting at the Elders Comock and saying, you know, is there anybody who has an idea for a youth program? Like, if it involves women and children and safety, we have funding. And who has funding? Or are you running a program and you don't think enough people know about it? Or are you willing to help people get to the grocery store who are afraid to walk because of the dogs? Or, you know, like, anything, like, have the people that coming that sort of want to contribute to addressing some of it.
Thank you.
safety representative. I'm optimistic the city of Iqaluit will find someone. But part of the programming that we're implementing through this group will be hosting different weeks, educational weeks, where different events can be hosted. There's some funding for swag that can be given out, things like that. So I think utilizing some of those programs that exist, and then potentially you talked about having a meeting where people come and not complain but share their concerns. What if we had an event where people come and meet community safety members? So you can have the bylaw officers or sorry, municipal enforcement or the RCMP or public TV or public health, whomever, but it's a positive event where we're identifying all the frontline safety people so that you have awareness of who they are, what we have in our community, and things like that. So it meets a few objectives. The objectives of our community safety liaison program, what community safety week is, and then we start identifying what's available so that when people do complain or they have concerns, they have a better understanding of what the community already has or what's going on. And it's just a better way to engage folks in a positive setting.
Thank you. Great points. And again, the reason why I brought it up, just to ensure like we do move forward with our right foot forward and have more productive conversations outside of this room. And it's great to hear. And moving forward, we won't propose an additional meeting for now. But I think having more conversations outside of this room together, I think will help with initiating our next steps moving forward. Right. So move on to the last item is adjournment. I need a mover and a second. Moved by Deputy Mayor Smith, seconded by Mr. Robert Daly. All those in favor? Unanimous. Thanks, everyone.